Dan, welcome back to the show, my man. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Do you have an answer as to why the Raptors can seemingly play quite well until the waning moments of a quarter, and specifically halftime, because they have got crushed in a lot of series heading into half the final few minutes?
Yeah, it's been the second quarter of doom for them through games one and two, it seems like. And it's like you said, especially at the end of these quarters and the end of the first half, they seem to be falling behind. I think it's mostly a matter of the pressure on their defense starting to wear on them. When you don't have Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan playing at a high level at the same time on the offensive end in terms of their scoring, it really puts a lot of pressure on you to be perfect on defense and to limit the Cavaliers' offensive firepower. As we've seen time and again throughout the playoffs, there really isn't a team in the Eastern Conference that can do that. If LeBron isn't beating you off the dribble, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love are beating you with their shooting. They've also gotten great contributions from guys like Richard Jefferson, J.R. Smith, and even Channing Frye at points. And all of that pressure, it just starts to wear on the Raptors. They need to get consistent offensive contributions from their stars. And if they're not going to get them from their stars, they're going to need more out of some of their role guys who are coming off the bench, where Terrence Ross has to be nearly perfect every night. Corey Joseph has to be nearly perfect every night. Something needs to give there. Otherwise, this is going to continue to be a long yet quick series.
Oh, yeah, it will be long and painful for Raptors and their fans, but quick in the fact that it might only be four games. Now, very, very few people were expecting the Raptors to win this series. And a lot of people didn't think they'd win a game. Now, I thought they'd win one for sure. I still think they'll find a way to win in Toronto. But, you know, I'm not sure how they can contain LeBron James. They just, like, his size and athleticism, it's just so rare in today's game. And the Raptors, they just don't have anybody physically who can match up. So if you come home now, and it's not like hockey where there's last change and you could have matchups. It's just in you got your home fans instead. What do you think Toronto can do differently to try to contain LeBron?
There are two things, and it just comes with the caveat that it really doesn't even hit you sometimes until you see LeBron in person. He just doesn't look human. He just has that perfectly built size and seems to tower over everybody, even those who are taller than him. But if you're the Raptors, the first thing you need to do is your health defense needs to be better, because once he's beating that primary defender off the dribble, yes, you don't want to send these double and triple teams at him because Cleveland has so many shooters, but if Bismack Biyombo is going to rotate over, then you need to have someone near the basket for that extra pass, or if he somehow gets past Bismack Biyombo. You want to foul less, too. The Cleveland Cavaliers are taking entirely too many free throws. They doubled up the Raptors last night in game two. And I guess the last thing that you want to try and do, but it's one of those things where it's easier said than done, try and goad LeBron into some more jump shots. You can't let him get to the rim at will. And maybe that's where you start to chance it with some double teams. And you don't want to leave the Cavaliers open for three. Your rotations have to be spot on to really prevent them from doing that. But if the alternative is him getting to the line a bunch of times, 17 times last night, and they got lucky that he only hit 9 free throws. If that's the alternative, him getting these easy looks at the bucket and these N1 and foul shot opportunities, you really need to play him more than you do the three-point line.
Dan Favalli joins us from the Bleacher Report. Dan, do you think the LeBron and the Cavs are getting the benefit of the doubt in their calls, or are the Raptors just strictly taking too many fouls?
It's probably a combination of both. I know there are certain referees who have even said that they officiate against road teams tougher, so perhaps we'll see that free throw number diminish as we look at the games 3 and 4, but it's been far too astronomical in games 1 and 2 to say that it's on the referees and that the Raptors aren't getting the right calls. There have been a bunch of questionable instances, and everyone always talks about how the referees treat LeBron like he's this glass vase, but again, the Raptors just seem to be hacking when they're getting beat off the dribble, and when you can't keep up with not only LeBron, but Kyrie Irving or some of these other guys, even if it's Tristan Thompson when he's rolling to the rim or Kevin Love when he's doing the same, you just have to stop whacking them. You have to find a way to stay in front. And while, again, that's easier said than done, the Raptors just aren't doing a great job of even trying right now. So it's going to require some adjustments on Dwayne Casey's part, but that number has to come down, and that's on the Raptors more than it is the officials.
Dan, the Cavaliers have not lost a game this postseason. They're 10-0. Tyronn Lue was a midseason replacement for David Blatt. In your opinion, is he getting too much credit, not enough credit, or just the right amount of credit for his team seemingly breezing through the first 10 games?
The credit he's getting seems to be the happy medium right now. You don't want to drum it up if he's turned the Cavaliers into some type of powerhouse. They've had the talent on paper to be this. He's just been able to connect with players in a way that David Blatt never was. And I think you really need to credit him for disciplining LeBron James early on in his tenure as head coach. We've seen the reports out there about what he said after LeBron was palling around with Dwayne Wade at halftime of a blowout loss. And the thing about what he said to LeBron once in the huddle, it really helps establish a clear pecking order to where, hey, LeBron's not always in control. Sometimes he's going to get that absolute power, but I'm here. I can do this. And the players seem to be buying into the ball movement that he wants and the pace that he wants. They're not playing super fast, but they're more opportunistic in transition. And that ball is just fluttering around when they're in the half court or the full court. It doesn't matter. That's a stark shift from what we saw in the Cavaliers through the first half of the season. And even after Tyronn Lue took over for a little bit, that they've reached that point now in the playoffs when it matters most is phenomenal for him. And it is an indication of the job he's doing. You do want to see how these Cavaliers will measure up against Western Conference teams, but you don't get to 10-0 in the Eastern Conference playoffs by accident. This team is playing well. And as much as LeBron James, Irving, Love, et al., are all a part of it. Tyronn Lue is there too, and he deserves a fair amount of credit for sure.
Dan, taking a look now in the Western Conference Final, it's now a best of five between Golden State and OKC. I know Kevin Durant won the MVP 2 years ago, but is this the best basketball he's played since really joining the NBA?
You can make a case. He's been a lot better defensively, it seems like, during these playoffs, even though all the numbers don't support it. His offensive numbers have been kind of weird. You'd expect him to be taking over more than he has. A lot of his shots are so tough, too, and he hasn't been doing an excellent job of moving the ball late in games. Those are things you can nitpick. But I think in terms of recognizing what to do on the defensive end and the playmaking that he's taken on overall, we're not just talking about during the final few minutes of games, you can certainly argue that this is the best version or the most fun version or the most complete version of Kevin Durant we've ever seen. And the fact that he's still in the thick of his prime and could get even better, that's going to be exciting to watch unfold, whether it's in Oklahoma City next season or somewhere else.
Dan, it was interesting. I saw a stat ESPN stats guys on Twitter put out comparing where LeBron and Steph Curry are making their shots from. And Steph, of course, the distance traveled is significantly farther. He's playing a lot farther away from the rim where LeBron is crushing it inside. And I think it really shows the difference in really the styles of the two teams. And you look at OKC, how they dominated them in game one and then got spanked in game two. Do you think it's possible to shut down their outside shooting consistently in a seven-game series, or is it just too hard to defend?
It's just too hard to defend. These are guys who are just making shots that are very difficult, and they would be considered exceedingly hard opportunities for other teams and other players. But when you have an entire team, an entire collective, making those shots and creating those shots, those off-ball movements that are able to get them open and make things even easier, it's just impossible to defend, and it makes it even harder because if you decide to chase them off the three-point line, as other teams have done in the past, they're just going to beat you at the rim, and they're just going to get to the line. That's what makes them so dangerous, and you don't like to use the word impossible to defend, but they really are impossible to defend if you limit it. It's just a matter of picking your poison, and even then, you're not guaranteed to be able to pick your poison just because, again, they are so good at making those contested three-pointers.
Who do you think would be a better matchup for the Cavs? Is it the Thunder automatically, or do you think they want a shot at the reigning champs, and really that's who LeBron wants to beat? Who do you think would be the best matchup, maybe for fans, or maybe looking at it from Cleveland perspective?
For fans, I think the Warriors-Cavaliers matchup is what you want to see just because there was sort of a little bit of a back and forth after last year's finals ended where Kyrie Irving said if the Cavaliers were healthy, they would have beat the Warriors in that series. Now the Cavaliers are fully healthy. They're deeper, and they're going to go up against the best version of the Warriors that we've seen thus far. So that's very intriguing from just a narrative and storyline standpoint. If we're looking in terms of you want a competitive, tightly contested, full seven-game series, the Thunder-Cavs would just make a lot more sense. You would have to give credit to the Thunder for beating the Warriors, but you can also see the Warriors just obliterating the Cavs in ways that Oklahoma City cannot. I look to that third quarter of Game 2 between Oklahoma City and Golden State, and even if you look at the entire game, the Warriors weren't exactly spectacular for a full 48 minutes, but they put together these bursts, specifically Stephen Curry, where you're in this close game, and then 2, 3, 4 minutes later, you're not. It's just a blowout. Stephen Curry single-handedly did it in the third quarter of Game 2, and they can do that to any team. It's why I don't think you could say that any matchup within reason could be picked to go a full seven games. You would expect the Warriors to end it sooner. So just from that competitive standpoint, the Cavs and Oklahoma City just match up so much better.
Dan, we appreciate it. We look forward to the West, and hopefully the Raptors try to find a way to make this a series in the Eastern Conference Final. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. Take care.